They are not like those breaking waves that were, for early Christians, a sign of God's beneficence. Saint Basil wrote in the 4th century that at the moment when the sea meets the land, quote, it withdraws out of respect, bowing its waves, as if to worship the Lord who has appointed its limits, unquote. That's a history too wave, supernatural. Neither are such waves emissaries of unrepentant modernity, as for Nietzsche in The Gay Science, which is the book in which he killed God, in which he wrote, how greedily this wave approaches, as if it were after something, how it crawls with terrifying haste into the inmost nooks of this labyrinthine cliff, but already another wave is approaching, still more greedily and savagely than the first, and its soul too seems to be full of secrets and the lust to dig up treasures, unquote. These waves are not either like the wave of Octavio Paz's 1949 short story, My Life with the Wave, a wave that the protagonist takes home, a tempestuous seductress that might be tamed in a mer-masculine heterosexual conquest. No, rogue waves are of our historical moment. Like the rogue states, of which their name must remind us, they are just large and unpredictable enough to disturb institutional business as usual. They are part of human worlds, never accessible outside cultural meaning, no matter what the new materialists say. The possibility that they emerge most strongly in the South gets me to my next episode. I return in the final third of this lecture, then, to where I began, at Kiwi Oz Waves, the first Australasian wave conference. I was drawn here by the words first and Australasian. Now, I certainly did not expect a shot across the bow, post-colonial subaltern studies takedown of northern hemispheric and computational wave models, a call for wave modeling to be turned upside down, like a counter-ideological south-up map. And anyway, Australia, that is to say, Euro-Australia, is hardly a distinct science community, especially at this workshop, since, in spite of the conference name, no one, with the exception of one postdoctoral fellow from Iran, had any academic base in Asia. With scholars from France, Germany, and the UK, this was a cross-equatorial eddy from the north. Still, there was a keen sense that southern ocean dynamics were underrepresented. One European model had been found to underestimate wave heights by 20% in the southern hemisphere. Just after the workshop, Nature Climate Change published on misestimations of southern ocean sea surface temperatures in most climate models, the result of assuming too low cloud cover over southern seas, a topic at another conference where one might indeed get wave theory from the south, the International Conference on Southern Hemisphere Meteorology and Oceanography. What other elements make a difference in modeling waves in the southern hemisphere? An Australian meteorologist rattled off to me 4 major distinctions between southern and northern hemispheres. First, there is more solar radiation hitting the sea in the south than the north. This part of the Earth is closer to the sun most of the time. Second, there's a lot more ocean, uninterrupted in the south, which means the proportion of the ocean suffused by swells, waves which are no longer driven by their initiating wind, is much higher. Third, there's less particulate plant matter in the near-sea atmosphere because there's less land. Fourth, there's a larger area of ice in southern oceans. This man put it bluntly, quote, northern hemispheric assumptions are built right into the models, including of waves. That makes them challenging to use in the southern hemisphere, unquote. But northern hemispheric assumptions are hard to tease out. Southern oceans are less heavily instrumented than northern ones. One conferee from Australia recounted a visit to Miami and said to me, quote, if you're in the northern hemisphere and they tell you that the wave front will come in at 4:30, it will come in at 4:30. If you're in Australia and they say it will come in at 4:30, it might come in tomorrow, unquote. There's a geopolitical reason. Among the larger coastal nations that might manage such systems, India, South Africa, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Indonesia, there has not been a highly state-funded, capitalized maritime infrastructure. Even Australia is ringed by only 25 buoys. The US monitors about 200, which most complain is still too few. Satellite data can sometimes, though not always, substitute. Dean and John Komaroff write of that zone known these days as the Global South, that its geographies have been treated in social theory as, quote, a place of parochial wisdom, of antiquarian traditions, of exotic ways and means, and above all, of unprocessed data, reservoirs of raw fact, unquote. One might say that in oceanography, the Southern Hemisphere has been similarly construed, a zone of unprocessed data, although much of the data hasn't even been gathered yet. What kind of data to collect about open ocean wave action, about the wave-agitated breakup of Antarctic and ice, about storm surges in low-lying South Asian countries is an ongoing question. What happens when models are transposed from one sea to another? Practitioners worry a good deal about this, what they call regional tuning. But the boundary between fundamentals and tuning is not laser clear. Sometimes tuning means incorporating regional measures, sometimes tweaking algebraic parameters to yield the right values, fudging, some uncharitably say. Several talks featured extensive detail on such tuning. At one point, smiling to a couple of scientists who told me that for them, listening to such talks was like, quote, having a drill held to your head, unquote, I stepped out to the Newcastle Art Museum, a block away, which turned out to have an exhibit of paintings and sculptures of waves. When I showed postcards of these works to one scientist, he'd been too busy to squeeze a museum into his day, he judged them as he would a wave model hastily tuned, quote, that painting is missing the whole water column. This is just the surface feature, unquote. He had very unkind words for the sculpture, quote, it's like it's done by a child. Waves do not break like that, unquote. What was true of the art, he said, was also true of science, quote, when you represent what a wave is, you can only do it partially, unquote. Let me give an example of partiality in tuning a model, an example not from south of the equator, but from a country otherwise south of dominant centers of wave modeling, Iran. An Iranian scientist described the trickiness of characterizing the part of the Gulf of Oman known as the Chabahar Zone. Iran wants to harness waves here for electricity, but needs more information. Unlike the Persian Gulf, which is heavily instrumented, the Gulf of Oman has poor buoy coverage. The scientist worked with the data that he could get, plugging this into a model of wave action called SWAN, simulating waves near shore. He did not use the WaveWatch model, not only because it's better for the open ocean, but also because trade embargoes prevent WaveWatch from being exported from the United States to Iran. He needed a recipe for simulated wind, and he borrowed one from a European model. It didn't work. What happened? Babineen helped me figure it out. Wave models traditionally are validated by means of observations, and that's always some geographically linked observations. Satellites are global, but buoys are definitely regional. So if there's anything in your region and you tune your model to perform well in this region, then if you take it to another region where certain things are different, it can have biases, unquote. In this Gulf of Oman case, average wind speeds from the North Sea to which European models tuned were different from Gulf wind speeds. This was a natural scientific iteration of what Chakrabarty names as the logic of universe, which for social sciences have often claimed first in Europe, then elsewhere, with Europe now not so much a full-blown ideological reference, but a set of teensy-tiny technical details. The most striking hemispheric angle on wave science came in talks on Antarctica. Not only is there less ice in the Antarctic than a few decades ago, its character has changed. Storm waves have fractured pack ice, breaking it into tiny ice floes. More than one speaker told harrowing stories of standing on floes, attaching wave measuring accelerometers when things got cracky. So people put these kind of accelerometers on these different fragments of ice and then have to jump away and get back to the ship. Who cares about the Southern Ocean except us? People will start caring, though, if it affects global climate, unquote. Funding for wave modeling in Antarctic settings is on the rise, and scientists in Australia are well positioned to access the continent, which anthropologist Jessica O'Reilly, in her forthcoming book, Technocratic Wilderness, observes has been reinvented many times as a site of extreme futures, and not only in the works of H.P. Lovecraft.